and welcome. This is Trials and Tribulations. I'm Phil Airy, and I've got my two cohorts,
Sarah Owen Hughes
and me, Faith Douglas.
This is quite novel.
It is.
This, you and me, looking at each other.
How are you?
Over a table. Oh my God.
As seen on TV.
As seen on TV, yes. Yes, yeah, you've been on your little travels.
I have. I've been around a bit.
So please tell, where have you been?
Well, most recently I've been down to RHS Wisley, where I delivered a keynote speech to the plant school, the plant science summer school for the students who've done 8-week placements with them. And it was fantastic. I mean, I've been to Wisley lots over the years. It's really lovely to see somewhere that is changing and evolving. And they have built this fantastic new plant science centre at Hilltop. And it overlooks the orchards, which are amazing.
It does look amazing. I've seen the pictures. It does look...
It really is. Yeah. What's lovely is it's really accessible. So they've got a display downstairs with lots of strands of plant science, why plant science is important and why it helps us to grow better crops, how we use it for medicines, how we use it for research, how we grow better food. They've got the herbarium with a big picture window so you can actually watch the staff taking samples and drying them and pressing them. The science team are upstairs, but you can do backstage tours. You can book in to do tours around the labs and see what they're doing. And even better, they have a gin bar on the roof.
Hello there.
I mean, what could be better?
It's
perfect.
No wonder you enjoyed yourself.
I had a lovely time living my best life.
Fantastic. well, we really need to introduce this very dapper young man next to me.
I know.
He's next
to me as well.
He's next to you as well. That's a socially distanced, but still. Hello there.
Hello.
It's Aaron.
Thank you for having me.
Do you know, I think what it is, I think we must put a picture on for our listeners because he looks the business.
Well, Aaron has always looked the business. Aaron and I, this is Aaron Hickman.
Yeah.
And we worked together for probably about 7 or 8 years Askenbrine College. He was one of the glasshouse staff and I was one of the tutors. And so he used to teach my students how to do things properly when I'd misinformed them, and has always looked immaculate and smartly dressed, and is the epitome of a classic gardener.
100%.
That's very kind.
And you're now a head gardener at a private estate.
This is literally straight from work. I was dragged literally by the scruff of my neck straight after work, expecting a nice sit down and a cup of tea, relax at the end of the day. And no, Sarah was on the drive. As soon as I walked through the cottage gate, ready to hoik me away. So, yeah, this is me slightly scruffy at the end of the working week. So if I still look tidy, I'm quite happy with that. That'll do for me.
Well, it's not often you see people still wearing a tie, you know, when they're working in a garden. But it's a fantastic. It's the way that you've always worked.
It is, yeah. It's a bit of a homage in some ways. But I also see it as a respect thing to my employers, that obviously being in charge of the gardens on the estate, you've got to make an impression.
Yeah.
And it's either that or shout. So I think I'd rather dress tidily.
Absolutely. And you are the head gardener of a fantastic estate, which it is private, so we're not going to talk about it in huge detail, but it's large, isn't it?
It is, yeah. And it's quite unusual, I think, these days to find purely private estates that are never open to the public that are these real jewels that run pretty similar to what they would have done, you know, 100, 120 years ago almost, in the kind of real peak of you know, the Victorian strive for perfection in horticulture. So it's really nice to find somewhere in such a lovely part of the world, let alone country, that can provide this wonderful playground for me, which is what I see it as, really.
And
it's a playground.
And you've got everything. You've got rockeries, white gardens, veg gardens.
Yeah, yeah. And certainly the restoration and renovation and recreation of the Victorian walled garden, it dates from about 1856, has certainly been a real sort of high point so far. And to see that coming back from, I think it's about 30 years that it's been out of use, and to see that now in the last 2 years come back into production again has been a real joy.
Is a very special space, but you know, unfortunately, most of us can't enjoy it.
We'll describe it.
Now, have you got a stumpery?
Very close, actually. We have what we refer to as the ravine, which is basically a gorge cut into the bedrock that you can work through. And originally, when it was constructed, it was an alpine garden. And when I took over on the estate, it was neglected and overgrown and largely kind of filled in with leaf litter. And quite a heavy canopy over the top of Rhododendron ponticum that had moved in over the years. And on sort of clearance of the area and the decision on whether we go back to an original restoration or what, we decided to kind of work with it as it was, as we found it, as I found it, and turn it into a stumpery fernery type creation, which is, again, one of those real Victorian follies, these ideas of recreating nature that really was so contrived. But at the same time, rather special. So we've kind of gone down that route. So yeah, we do kind of have a stumpery in that sense.
I do like a good stumpery.
You can't
even
beat a good stumpery.
Even though it's probably quite old fashioned, but I think it's nice to keep things like that.
There is something magical about it. It's like finding a lost paradise. It's like going to Heligan.
And it is a little bit Jurassic as well. When you get the shapes, as well.
With the ferns especially. Yes,
I was gifted a frond from one of your tree ferns, wasn't I?
That was taller than me. I'm not the tallest of people, but it was taller than me.
It was over 6 foot tall because we did measure it, and I was gifted it, and it was quite something to put in a vase and have this enormous frond in the hall for a week or so. It was magical. But I mean, obviously, I've wanted to talk to Aaron on the show for a long, long time. But one of the things that really struck me again is I was fortunate enough a couple of weeks ago to receive an enormous fistful of sweet peas from Aaron. And I took a picture, posted it online. And I have to say, I had the most amazing responses, mostly from non-gardeners. I mean, generally, I'll post pictures of plants because I love them. And my planty friends will go, oh, that's lovely, or oh, it's not for me. But the response I got was from people who don't grow, aren't my gardening friends. They're friends through other means, through other circles. And it was all about the emotion that sweet peas evoked. So I really wanted to talk to Aaron because he is the president of the Yorkshire Sweet Pea Society. So who better to talk to about sweet peas? And the comments I was getting was, my stepfather used to leave them in my room when I came home from college in the summer, and they were my granddad's favourite flowers, or I remember them at somebody's wedding. And there's something particularly special about sweet peas. So I wanted to talk to you about why you think they are so special.
I do think they're an incredibly evocative flower. And there is so much to them. They're multifaceted. But I think for most people, it is the scent.
Yeah.
There's something about the smell of sweet peas that takes people back, whether it's granddad's garden or an old allotment they remember being on years ago or whatever it may be. But I think there is something incredibly evocative about the smell of sweet peas. And tied with a wonderful bloom. You know, it's a beautiful flower. It's not overstated, it's not understated, it's not huge and blousy, but at the same time, it's not minuscule. It just kind of, the sweet pea has just kind of got it right for me. And I think the other really nice thing is that they are incredibly easy to grow. You know, we could say that orchids are stunning, and they're evocative, and they're exotic. But, you know, a lot of people find them, or certainly view them as being difficult to grow, requiring a lot of care and input. Whereas really, sweet peas don't need that. They grow very happily in our UK climate, even up here in North Yorkshire, you know. And I think that's a really important thing. They're cheap.
Yeah.
The seeds aren't expensive. It's an annual, so the whole thing is done and over with in 1 year. Now, to some people, that's quite a sad thing, but at the same time, it gives you a chance to redo every year, whereas people may struggle with shrubs or roses, the right type of pruning, these sort of silly things. Whereas with a sweet pea, you get it wrong in one particular year, you get it right the next year, because you start the whole process again. And like I said, they aren't particularly difficult as long as certain conditions are met. They're incredibly easy and very rewarding.
And I think as well, I think part of the joy is because they're quite rare in the sense that because they're so ephemeral, it's very, very rare that you see them in shops to buy because the blooms don't last very long.
Is that the main reason?
I think it might be. I think
because I can't think of anybody who says, I don't like sweet peas.
No.
It might be that they're favourite, but nobody dislikes sweet peas. They'd be beautiful.
I think it's a personal gift as well, because you generally only get sweet peas if somebody's picked them and given
very
them
true.
To you. You can't go to the shop and buy them very often. I mean, I've grown the perennial sweet pea, Lathyrus vernus, for years in a large pot, and they are beautiful and very delicate, but they're not fragranced. So for me, it's the joy of those flowers for the first sort of 2 or 3 weeks that they flower. Then I let them die back, move the pot to the back, and then bring them back to the front of the house at the beginning of the year, and it's a real harbinger of spring for me.
Yeah.
But this year is the first time I've actually grown sweet peas at home, because we used to grow them at the college together, which we'll talk about in a sec. And it was a packet of free seeds I was gifted by Horticap of Spencer sweet peas at Christmas. You gave them away with every purchase in the shop.
Yeah.
And I thought, I'm going to give it a go this year. And honestly, I mean, it's not taken a huge amount of work.
No.
I've not grown them as accurately or as carefully as maybe like I should have done, but the joy I've had from seeing them and smelling them as I've walked in and out of the house, they've been by the front door, the joy of having them in a tiny bud vase and just having half a dozen blooms fill the house with fragrance, and knowing that 2 days later I'll get another bunch and another bunch and another bunch, has been just magical. And I will absolutely make a point of growing them every year from
and the
now
thing
on.
Is you can be quite creative of how you grow it.
Yes.
So the actual The stand itself, you can be as creative. They look great when it's just like brush, wood put together. You know what I mean? It looks really
hazel twigs, yes.
You know, it looks really rustic.
Yeah.
And but then you can go really formal with it. You know what I mean? I think you can. And the thing is, it's annual. So if you make a mistake,
do it right.
You've got
next year. Exactly.
Yeah.
That is quite interesting. You say that. That's kind of the method that that I grow peas on. The thing is, a lot of these societies, certainly the Yorkshire Sweet Pea Society that you mentioned just previous, this is pretty much a society built up of people that are incredible growers and fantastic exhibitors. And it's not just always about being able to grow the quality blooms; it's knowing how to stage. Now, I'm very different in the sense that I don't grow for exhibition. In that my remit basically is to grow good quality cut flowers year round for the big house. And sweet peas focus quite highly within that. So I do need quality, but at the same time, I don't have the time to grow on the cord method that exhibitors will use to get these exceptionally long stems and incredibly perfect flowers. I can now allow a little bit of discrepancy, a little curve in the stems, not the end of the world to me. I can still use that. But the method that I use is, like you say, this very rustic framework, generally out of hazel pea sticks that we can cut from the estate, you know, as a sort of sustainable thing. And the whole thing doesn't involve any plastic. It's either fully compostable, decomposable, whatever you need it to be, structure. It doesn't have to be that way, but that's the way that I like
I do think they look amazing when I see them interweave into that.
Yeah,
into the brush.
It's a natural climate. Yes. It has these tendrils. So if you provide lots of twiggy material for it to grab onto, it's much less work for us on tying in. There's still quite a bit to tying in to do, but largely it cuts that work down. Mm. You know, whereas when you grow on the cordon method, which is a fantastic way, if you've never done it, try it. It really is quite intensive. But you remove the tendrils, because the tendrils have a propensity for holding on to the flower spikes and actually pulling them out of shape. So you remove the tendrils, you cut them off, and you have to physically hand tie in the stem all the way up.
Yeah.
But of course, the plant has got its own natural way of doing what it should do, which is climbing. You provide the right framework, it will do the job for you.
So a cordon is growing at a 45-degree angle,
isn't it? No, it's a single stem. So we generally I generally sow in the autumn anyway. There's a big debate on whether it should be a spring or an autumn sowing, which gets the best. I can talk about that a little more if you'd like. Then they sit there quite happily all winter, pinched out quite early in the year. And it's just one of the side shoots that's selected, and they're allowed to grow up to about 3 feet, 3 feet six. Then the whole thing is cut off the framework, generally an 8-foot single cane, laid flat on the ground.
Right.
And then another side shoot is taken up, and that becomes your leader, basically. That's what you take up. Mm. So again, it's quite labour intensive, takes quite a lot of skill, being able to lay those stems down without cracking them, overlaying them, getting them to line up. But once you get it, the quality of the blooms is just exceptional. And I really take my hat off to the exhibit growers.
Yeah.
And it really is a skill all of its own.
Yeah. So we used to grow them for the Sweet Pea Society.
Indeed,
we used to do the trials of their sweet peas at the college. And that was an incredible experience for students, because they actually saw in real life what's involved in growing to a certain specification for a trial. And they were involved in joining the judges, the selection committee, and seeing what made a good bloom for showing.
But this was also another really good thing about the whole annual nature, that every year, every student intake that started in September and left in, you know, June, July, we used to sow in October, And then judging was generally in May, June time. Yep. So they could see from start to finish, not only a full crop, but then also be involved in the judging part at the end of it, if they wanted to be, to come and see what the judges were looking for, how they were selecting, why they were kind of, you know, disregarding certain things. So it was a fantastic trial to have had on an annual basis that people could, you know, the students could be really involved in. And I was really happy to take that on. It was previously run by a very famous big garden within the UK, I'll not mention names, who weren't always the best, shall we say, at keeping the seeds in the pots that they should have been at sowing time. And in the trials, we used to look for what were called roguing. So in other words, if it's been submitted as a lavender on cream and there's several blues coming through, that's a rogue. It shouldn't be there. So sometimes it's a throwback to the breeding programme, basically. Now, that's fine. That sometimes happens. But at the same time, if somebody's mixed the seed up, you're then somebody's had to pay to submit that to the trials, and that's then being thrown out because it's being rogued, and actually it's not at all. It's just a seed that's being mixed up.
Yeah.
And I was very pleased that through the tenure of overseeing the trials at Askham, we got very few mixed up ones.
Yeah.
We could identify the rogues, and we knew the breeders that were the worst for it. again, I'll mention no names. But again, we only had, I think, two or three wrong-sown seeds in the few years, believe it or not. And I could identify, because we could match them to other plants that were out there.
Yeah.
And that was quite an important thing. But it was a lovely thing to have seen. Grown very differently, not very ornamentally, because it wasn't about making the plants look nice. Mm. So we used to grow on these huge chicken wire frames that were kind of like a V shape, open at the front, just a cross cane. So certainly not attractive. And these were just in very dead straight rows with weed membrane over the beds, very sterile. It was just about getting the plants to grow as best as possible so they could be judged. And that was interesting. But at the same time, now it's nice to take that away and put it back into a garden setting.
Yeah.
And generally, they were judged on two things. It was either for exhibition or what we call garden deck. So would it look good in a garden setting?
Yeah.
And sweet peas do. Yeah. They do. They look fantastic. I grow them mostly now in the walled garden down the central walk. We've got two mixed borders either side, and the sweet peas, they are basically the backdrop to those two mixed borders. So they're ornamental, they're floriferous, providing the house with cut flowers, and they fill the air, especially you walk the gardens at 6 o'clock on a summer evening, the sun's just starting to drop over, and it's just stunning, and it is evocative. And even now, it can take me to a different place and get lost in the scent. It is just wonderful.
Mm.
And the colours are, I'm not going to say controversial, but there is a certain colour and a certain fragrance that people are looking for, because some of the more modern sweet peas haven't had the fragrance, some of the old-fashioned ones had better fragrance but less good flowers.
Mm.
What are our growers looking for nowadays? What colours would they like to have?
I think the thing is now, again, it's people are looking for anything that's out of the ordinary. I think this is a real balance between finding something that's different, innovative, but not just a pure novelty. And this is the real kind of difficult line to find. So a very good friend of mine, one of the best hybridisers, Andrew Bean, that used to lead up the judging panel at Askham Bryan, and is still a close personal friend, he had sent down some seed, because there's quite a few of us that still grow on bits for Andrew, because he's not always got enough space. He's got a massive garden and a huge allotment, but still never quite enough space. And another mutual friend of ours was the ex-park superintendent at Derby. And Alec was growing these particular stands on for Andrew. And Andrew had gone down to visit, and he said, "Oh, you need to come and look at these. They're absolutely horrendous, horrible things. What have you done with these? What have you done to get these?" And I can't even describe them, to be honest. It was a very, very unusual colour. And we all suggested that the variety, the cultivar, should be called Marmite, simply because people either loved them or hated them. It wasn't the colour. It was, and it had a very strange colour fade that started out as an orange, like a burnt orange, and then faded to like this hint of purple. It was so unusual. And most people were a bit sort of, ooh, you know, don't like that. Mm. The florist students came past and went absolutely wild over it because it was a colour they didn't really have available in their palette, certainly not in a sweet pea.
Yeah.
The nearest thing, really, and it certainly wasn't near, but the nearest thing probably was a sweet pea called Clementine Kiss. which doesn't have the colour fade, but has that, that strong burnt orange to it, really. But it was just, it was so out there. It was so out there compared to everything else that I'd seen before and the rest of the judging panel had seen before. But people were exceptionally divided because it was so different.
I remember it really well. I remember one of the judging days and seeing, it was quite heated discussion amongst all the judges because you were all looking at it and going, this really isn't right. It doesn't sit comfortably. Mm. But it was a showstopper. It stopped
it was different.
People in their tracks. And the florists, I remember it so well, the florists were saying, this is exactly that pop of copper that we haven't got available in summer bouquets that brides would go bananas for and we could sell for a fortune.
Yeah.
Because, again, they're ephemeral, they're fragrance, they're very evocative, but we haven't got that palette available to us. And that was really, it was really special because the floristry students opened the eyes of some of the judges, I think. And they could see another, maybe another use or another value to that flower?
This was why, like I say, originally the trials were running basically on two categories, which were exhibition and garden deck. And it was actually me that suggested as a result of that that we introduced a florist award, a first, second and third. And it generally was nowhere near what the judging panel were picking. They were picking vintage shades, certain scents, whatever it may be, that were actually very different to this group of judges who were very much exhibition, this is exactly what we need, stands well, good colour fade all the way through, or not a colour fade, or whatever it may be. And again, it was an extra element, an extra dimension that then also brought in a different group, you know, the florists who were not involved in the trials at all. It wasn't intended to be involved, but then brought a different group into it to offer their opinion and their guidance almost to these stalwarts of pea growing.
Yeah. So what flower shades are still not there yet in sweet peas? What colour do you think people are really trying to get?
Oh, it's yellow.
Really?
It's yellow. Yeah, Andrew's been after yellow for a long, long, long time. Wow. There are a few species, sweet peas, that are yellow, but certainly nothing in the annual category that's yellow. And that's the one. It's like the, you know, infamous black rose or black orchid or something like that that doesn't exist. And one day probably will, because we keep, you know, liking to mess about with things breeding-wise, and it will happen eventually. But yeah, it's the yellow sweet pea that a lot of people are still kind of aiming. The hybridisers and the breeders, certainly. I don't know if I'm allowed to say this or not, but the sweet pea we're just talking about, the burnt orange, was bought by King's. It is now commercially available.
Oh, is it?
I can't remember what they called it, because they decide the name. Well, Andrew had also bred another very, very nice sweet pea quite a number of years ago. And he lives, I probably shouldn't say where he lives actually, but he lives just outside Castleford, not far from a very long hill, long straight hill, called Mary Panel. And he decided to name the sweet pea after Mary Panel because of, you know, where it came from. Mary Pannell was an infamous lady of the night in that area, shall we say.
Oh, nice.
So when King's bought it, they renamed it Daily Mail. So you can now buy...
Oh, my word.
So you read into that what you may like. But so you can buy Daily Mail, sweet pea. It's out there.
Really? You'll find it. Now, I love that.
That was its history.
I love the history that behind history. That name. I love it.
It's fantastic. So obviously... I mean, we've talked about this loads over the years because my father-in-law was a great sweet pea grower, purely for that ability to cut flowers and have them in the house. And, you know, he'd travel with them from Yorkshire down to Devon every year. So we all had sweet peas waiting for us when we turned up at the cottage for family holidays. And he doesn't grow anymore because he's not able to anymore, but he still has a real soft spot for sweet peas. But every year we used to have this dilemma about October sowing or February sowing. So can you explain why there's such a dilemma about the sowing them in the winter or sowing them in the spring?
No. Okay. And that's the short answer. The long answer is this year, really, for the first year, I've always really done October sowings. And I'll aim to sow third week in October and I'll pinch out third week in January.
But this is undercover, isn't it? So they're protected.
Just. So the real key to sweet peas is cold and hard.
Okay.
That's how the best grown. So I sow them on heat as soon as they've germinated. Ease them off gently, so down to probably germinate at about 16, 17, 18, something like that, certainly no more. As soon as they're germinated, down to about 10. As soon as they're kind of nice and even, straight out. unheated greenhouse, unheated polytunnel, or the best still, cold frames.
Right.
And ideally, you keep the lights with as much vent on as you can all through the winter. If it's going to be exceptionally hard, shut them overnight. Maybe throw a bit of carpet or mat over. But really, the frosts won't hurt them.
Okay.
The colder and the harder, the better they will be. The one thing that they don't like are the winter rains and the winter winds.
Mm.
So as long as you can keep those two things off, they'll be brilliant. But this year was the first year, really, that I did a batch in October, as I normally would, and also a batch in January. And certainly, at Plantout, I planted them all out at the same time. There was a marked difference at Plantout in size, obviously, as you can imagine. But I reckon now, I bet you 10 bob, both of you, if I took you now to the walled garden and said, you tell me what was October and what was January, you would not be able to pick.
Right.
Interesting.
You would not be able to pick. They're all standing probably a good even 9, possibly even 10 feet tall, even flowering, etc., etc. You cannot really define which ones would be which. It took the January slightly longer to kind of catch up once they were planted out. They always sit and sulk for a week or so, a few weeks. But once they were off, they grow a lot.
Is it anything to do with the climate? Because obviously, I'm going back a bit now, but when I were a kid,
we're the same age, aren't we?
Yeah, well, not really.
Just look at it.
Winters were a lot colder and a lot longer. And
a bit drier as well.
And a little bit drier. And that's what I was going to say, a lot drier. Where now, because it's so mild over winter, you're getting real moisture in that ground. Yeah. And I just wonder if that...
potentially. And again, though, I've certainly noticed in the prior handful of winters we've had, winters tend to have shifted a little bit onwards. Yeah. It tends to be actually like post-Christmas. There tends to be not a great deal of winter before Christmas.
Yeah.
You know, like February time, we seem to get a real hit of it. So for a January sowing, they're still going to have that cold period that's going to hold them back and force them to grow nice and steady away. Short, sturdy, stocky plants. That's what we're really looking for. But to be quite honest, if you want something to do over winter and something to be able to, you know, mess about with, go for an October sowing.
Yeah.
If you can't be bothered and you don't want that hassle, go for a January sowing. It will all even out.
Mm.
It will even out genuinely.
Because like you say, come February, March, it can be really, really cold. And then in December and January, pretty mild.
And once they're in the ground, they do tolerate wet, don't they? It's just during the winter when they're first started off.
Again, moisture is one of the real keys. Moisture and feeding.
Yeah.
They're, on ground prep.
Yeah.
We aren't on no dig. People may disagree with that, but we aren't on no dig. So we incorporate a lot of organic matter. At least single dig, generally as a rule. We only single dig where the sweet peas are going as a rule of thumb, but sometimes double digging can help to break up that subsurface. The original rule of thumb was if you trench when you stood and you're digging for sweet peas, if it comes to the bottom button on your waistcoat, you've probably just about gone deep enough. Whereas we don't quite go to that extent anymore. That's quite a lot of effort for one crop.
They are big feeders though, aren't they?
They're big feeders, they're greedy.
Yeah.
Like I say, I'll aim to plant out around March, early April time again.
Yeah.
Don't worry about the last frosts. They've been grown cold and hard. It won't matter.
Yeah.
Just be careful of those winds.
Yes.
I'm speaking weather, not personal.
but it
is, again, it's the winds that will do the damage, not the cold.
Okay.
Cold biting winds, but just winds in general. So sometimes a little bit of protection just to keep that early, March winds, April showers, a little bit of protection, but they'll be fine. They will genuinely be fine. And what I tend to do now is I will mark out a circle on the floor, probably about 3 feet, 3 foot six diameter. You can convert that into new money, can't you? I don't know.
No,
that's fine.
meter and a half.
Yeah, somewhere around then. That's fine. And then I generally do 9 8-foot canes.
Yeah.
Equally spaced around that. Then in between those gaps, that's where the hazel sticks go. So you've got the support and structural integrity of the canes, but it's the hazel sticks that really make the structure. And in that, I'll put about 5 pots in which it'll be between 5 and 7 seeds sown. And then as soon as they're in, settle them in for a week. Then we go for reasonably high nitrogen feed. Keep them getting to, again, about 3 feet tall. Keep taking all the flower buds off till they're about 3 feet, 3 feet six. Then switch to high potassium, a tomato feed, something like that. then let them go, and they will grow like the green bay tree. They'll be gone. And that's a weekly thing. Then on with that tomato feed. Keep up with the deadheading. And this is the other wonderful thing about sweet peas. We're thrifty. We Yorkshiremen. We like to get... And Yorkshire women, sorry, Sarah. Beg your pardon. We like to get as money's worth.
Yes.
Might only be £2.50 for a packet of seed, but we still want to get as money's worth. The more you cut, the more you get. And that is the real key. As soon as they start to set seed and those pods start to form, they will slow down.
Yes.
So if you aren't cutting them for the house... So as they start to go over on the plants, take them off.
Of course, though, if you get to the stage where you've got your chrysanthemums and dahlias coming through and you're thinking, oh, it's early autumn, you can leave your sweet peas and you get free seeds for next
free
year.
Free seeds for next year.
I'm going to say, when do you stop?
Last year, I was still cutting on the same day that I sowed the seed.
Right.
Really?
So I sowed this year's seed as I was still cutting that current year's.
Right, yeah, right. October, that's amazing.
So again, that is value for money. Yeah, that really is, isn't it?
So it's sort of May, June time.
Onwards. All the way through.
No wonder people love them so much. Yeah. It's incredible.
I mean, they're just they're beautiful pastel colours. They're just
but there's some strong colours as well.
There is some strong colours. I do like the pastel colours.
Yeah, do you?
My personal taste. But,
so obviously, I've grown the Spencer, the classic Spencer mix this year. What would you say are the five sweet peas that I should be growing next year, Aaron?
Five? Oh gosh, I've got to narrow it down to five.
It's like choosing your favourite children. You could do 10 if you
wish. Well, personally, I'm a really big fan of the blues and the mauves. Mm. And I do personally think that the blues and mauves are the best scent. I love the blues and mauves. So Just Julia has always been a long favourite of mine. I love Just Julia. And I also love Dalesman. So Just Julia is slightly mauvier. Whereas Dalesman is a real blue, it's a strong blue, and also bred by Andrew again, of course, so I've got to be slight favouritism. That's a really good one, I like that one. Gwendolyn is the next one, and Gwendolyn is still like the top sweet pea virtually for the exhibitor's bench, the show bench.
What colour is she?
It's a slightly creamy white with a frill to it, a pink frill. It's really nice. And again, you will consistently get fours. So again, for exhibition, you need a minimum of four blooms per spike. Anything below that, it's instantly wrote out for exhibition, straight out. And Gwendolyn is very good at consistently holding his fours. You can sometimes get fives, you can sometimes push and get sixes, but the four is the real minimum, and Gwendolyn is exceptionally good for that. You can't beat White Supreme. If you want a pure white for weddings or things like that, White Supreme is an absolute cracker. It's a really good one. And then, again, another slightly unusual colour, I mentioned it earlier, probably Clementine Kiss. Mm-hmm. And Clementine Kiss is a strong sort of orangey tangerine. And it's quite unusual in the sweet peas. A lot of people tend to lean towards the lavenders and the blues and the pinks, the obvious. And to see an almost, in fact, it's pretty much the colour of that cup there, to be honest. And obviously, we'll show that on the mic, won't we? But it's a really vivid orange. And they're probably my five. That is five.
I do love a real dark burgundy sort of maroon as well. But you have to grow the lighter colours with it to balance it out.
I'm saying you can go on and on and on. Yeah. And there really is a fantastic range of colours. And also, there is a pea for every setting. Yeah. Whether it is just for garden deck, back of a border, matching them with colours, or whether you wanted them, you know, almost purely for cut flowers, there will be a pea there for you.
And it's obviously, it's cheap. It's quick and easy to grow. You don't need a huge skill set to be able to grow.
You can grow
them in pots quite easily as well. So they need lots of feeding. But
if you lean towards the pots, there is there's one called Cupid or Cupid series, and they've been bred to be grown in pots. They are the best ones. Still got the scent.
Yep.
Much dwarfer, squatter, slightly trailing. Slightly lax habit. You have to worry about tying in. Another good thing. No frameworks required, but they are the really good ones for pots, containers, and hanging baskets.
So they are a really accessible plant.
Incredibly,
For any grower at any level or any stage, it can become a lifelong obsession. Yeah. Of course, it can be a very expensive hobby, as any hobby can be. But it can be a really good, shall we say, gateway plant.
Indeed.
Well, it's a gateway for kids, I think.
To go
out to get a little posy of flowers and get them really interested in gardening.
And the thing is, again, going back to the growing with your children, it's nice big chunky seed. It's easy to hold.
Yes.
If you drop it, it's not going to shatter. In fact, if some of them you belt them with an hammer and they don't even crack, to be honest, but that's a different story. So they're not going to struggle really with the sowing, number one. They don't have to worry about having specialist equipment because they don't need that much heat. They don't need much mollycoddling. Then to see that tiny seed, it's not that tiny actually, but to see that tiny seedling tower up to nearly 10 feet by the end of the year, smothered in these intoxicating blooms in whatever colour you choose. What a fantastic way to get in children into growing.
It's
so
more exciting than sunflowers as well.
Well, yeah, but I mean, that's the go-to thing. It is.
It should be sweet pea, shouldn't it?
But, I mean, you're absolutely right. It should be sweet pea.
Yeah. Let's start a campaign.
That's going to be our mission, isn't it?
Yes.
Aaron, it's just been such a joy. Thank you so much for spending so much time talking to us. It's been intoxicating, hasn't it?
Absolutely.
That's just the smell of my jacket.
It's not going to be the last time you're on here.
Well, thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Well, that's it. Thanks for listening. That's been another edition of Trials and Tribulations. Now, if you liked it, please subscribe and follow. But until next time, keep it green.